Welcome to Learning English from the Voice of America. Our program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. Every day, we bring you news and information about America and the world. This is what you will hear on our program. Listen to our education report. Then on our history program, Making of a Nation, learn about the election of 1976. But first, this report.
Software maker Microsoft says that hackers linked to Russia's government tried to launch computer attacks on United States websites. The websites belonged to the U.S. Senate and to some conservative American research groups known as think tanks. Microsoft warned that Russia is expanding its attacks before U.S. congressional elections in November. The world's biggest software company said late on Monday that last week it took control of 6 web domains that hackers had created to look like websites belonging to the Senate and the think tanks. Users who visited the false websites were asked to enter information to log in to them. Microsoft's action is its latest effort to stop what it says are Russian government hacking attempts. The company said it has shut down 84 false websites in 12 court-approved actions over the past 2 years. The attacks are believed to have come from APT-28, a group under the Russian Military Intelligence Agency, GRU. It is believed to be the same group that interfered with the 2016 U.S. election. Microsoft did not blame the group directly, but named them in their statement. Microsoft President Brad Smith wrote about the hacking incident in a blog post. He said he was concerned that the hacking attempts are a security risk to American political parties as they near the 2018 election. Microsoft said it had no evidence that the hackers had been able to use any of the login information before the sites were removed from the web. This kind of attack is known as spear phishing. Spear phishing describes an operation in which hackers trick people into entering their username and password into a false site in order to steal their login information. Gaining login information would permit the hackers to get emails, contact lists, and other information of important individuals. Reuters news agency reported that Russia rejected the Microsoft accusations and said there was no evidence to support them. "We don't know what hackers they are talking about," Russian spokesman Dmitry Peskov told reporters. "Who exactly are they talking about?" He added that Microsoft did not show any real evidence to support their accusations. Russia has denied that it used hackers to affect U.S. elections and political opinion. The targets, Microsoft said, included the International Republican Institute. Its Republican members include Senator John McCain of Arizona. The Hudson Institute, another target, has held discussions on cybersecurity, Microsoft noted. It also explored the rise of government corruption and theft in Russia and has been critical of the Russian government. Other false domains were used to look like real websites used by the U.S. Senate and Microsoft's Office software, the company said. Microsoft's report came as tensions between Russia and the U.S. have grown. In July, a U.S. federal grand jury charged 12 Russian intelligence officers with hacking into the computer networks of Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton and the Democratic Party in 2016. I'm Susan Shand.
An increasing number of American states have identified teacher shortages as a major problem. In some states, there is especially a great need for teachers of special education, science, and math. In others, schools are not finding enough qualified language teachers. In general, the U.S. has seen increased demand for teachers in recent years. Student numbers have risen, even as many school systems sought to reduce overall numbers of students per teacher. Shortages have largely been blamed on low pay rates for U.S. teachers. The issue has caused some to leave for better-paying professions, while fewer people are choosing to become teachers. The nonprofit Learning Policy Institute reported a 35% drop in the U.S. of people studying to be teachers between 2009 and 2014. The group estimated that in 2016, the number of available teachers had reached a 10-year low. Over the past year, teachers from Arizona to West Virginia held major strikes to demand higher pay and better working conditions. In a new nationwide study, 49% of the public said they believe teacher pay should be raised in their states from current levels. In six states where teacher strikes were held in 2018, 63% agreed that teacher pay should increase, the Education Next study found. Worsening conditions caused by financial issues in some school systems, especially in large cities, have also made it difficult for some teachers to feel safe and effective in their jobs. Many U.S. states are facing teacher shortages heading into the new 2018-2019 school year. California is the most populous U.S. state. A study by the Learning Policy Institute found about 80% of school districts across the state reported a shortage of qualified teachers during the 2017-2018 school year. But education experts say it is difficult to speak about a nationwide teacher shortage because each state and school district is so different. K-12 Kate Walsh is president of the National Council on Teacher Quality. Her organization seeks to improve the health of the teaching profession. Walsh told VOA one way to look at it is that the country is actually made up of 50 separate labor markets. While the biggest shortages are often faced in rural areas and large cities, she says the causes can be different.
Some states really are not having much of a problem at all. Others do. And the reasons they do is not one single reason. The reason California is having a problem is not the same reason that Oklahoma is having a problem.
Some school systems with severe shortages have changed certification requirements to bring in more teachers. Others have decided to permit the hiring of teachers with little or, in some cases, no classroom experience. In some states facing shortages, Walsh says she is concerned that officials are lowering some quality requirements too much in an attempt to find enough teachers.
There have been a number of states which have made some decisions which we think run very much counter to teacher quality goals.
Walsh said often decisions to ease quality standards are made by state lawmakers in an effort to increase the number of teachers to please voters. The problem is such decisions can be made without actual data on how they will affect school systems in the long term, she added. Dan Goldhaber is the director of the Center for Education Data and Research at the University of Washington. He says another reason for teacher shortages is that certifications differ across U.S. states, making it more difficult for teachers to move to another state and quickly get a new job.
Teacher labor markets are pretty localized, and each state has a different licensure system. So it's not like you can easily hire someone to teach in California who is a teacher in Massachusetts. We don't have kind of a national teacher labor market.
Goldhaber says many teachers in this situation may decide to leave the profession because they would have to pay for additional classes and pass new certifications. Goldhaber said one possible solution might seem obvious, that is, raise pay and improve working conditions for educators.
It's pretty clear that working conditions matter for teachers. So not surprisingly, if people want to work in a safe environment, an environment with schools that are clean and that have up-to-date books and all of those kinds of working conditions.
Goldhaber says other things can also be done to help fight the problem. One would be to make changes to the U.S. teacher pipeline system to produce more qualified teachers.
So increase the number of people who are enrolling in teacher education programs and getting the credentials that they need to become teachers.
There are also several state and federal programs that provide financial assistance or student loan debt forgiveness for people entering education studies. Some of these programs are designed specifically to train much-needed math and science teachers. Others provide assistance for people willing to join schools seen as difficult to work in, or to teachers who will go to areas where there is the greatest need. I'm Brian Lynn.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. We look back at the presidential election of 1976. When Vice President Gerald Ford became president in 1974, he took office during a crisis. For the first time in American history, a president, Richard Nixon, had resigned. Nixon resigned as a result of the case known as Watergate. It involved the cover-up of illegal activities related to his re-election campaign. Lies about Watergate only added to the mistrust of Americans angry at having been misled about the war in Vietnam. After Vietnam and Watergate, many people no longer believed their public officials. Voters rejected Gerald Ford, a Republican, in the presidential election of 1976. Instead, they chose Jimmy Carter, the candidate of the Democrats. Why? One reason was that Ford had pardoned Nixon. He declared a pardon for any crimes that Nixon might have committed. This made many people angry. Also, he refused requests for federal aid for New York and other cities. Voters may have felt that he was not concerned about the problems of poor people. Others believe that unemployment and inflation defeated Gerald Ford. He was not able to deal effectively with these problems during his short presidency. There was competition for the Republican Party nomination in 1976. Ford's chief opponent was Ronald Reagan, who had just served two terms as governor of California. Democrats thought that voter anger about Watergate would help their party win the White House. 11 Democrats campaigned for the nomination. Two well-known politicians did not campaign, but they said they would serve if no other candidate won the party's support. They were former Vice President Hubert Humphrey and Senator Ted Kennedy. One of the lesser-known candidates was the former governor of Georgia, Jimmy Carter.
My name is Jimmy Carter, and I'm running for president.
Political experts gave him little chance of winning the nomination. Most Democrats did not even know who he was. Before becoming governor, he had been a nuclear power engineer in the Navy and a peanut farmer in Georgia. Again and again, he told people that he was not part of the political establishment in Washington. He also had strong Christian beliefs. This appealed to a lot of voters. Many voters supported Carter in the primary elections leading up to the party's nominating convention. His victory in the Florida primary was especially important. He defeated another politician from the South, Governor George Wallace of Alabama. Jimmy Carter represented what was called the New South. He made it clear that he opposed the ideas of the Old South, like discrimination against blacks. George Wallace spoke of creating a better life for both blacks and whites. Yet he had strongly defended racial separation for most of his political life. Many people remembered pictures of Governor Wallace at the University of Alabama in 1963. The pictures showed him blocking the door to prevent two young blacks from attending the school. The Republican primaries had mixed results for President Ford.
Right now, I predict that the American people are going to say that night, Jerry, you've done a good job. Keep right on doing it.
For example, in New Hampshire, he won only 51% of the vote. Ronald Reagan won 49%. But in Massachusetts, Ford won twice as many votes as Reagan did. The campaign showed that Reagan was more conservative than Ford. For example, Reagan talked strongly about United States control of the Panama Canal. In his words, "We built it, we paid for it, it's ours, and we are going to keep it." President Carter would later decide differently. Ford, in his campaign speeches, denounced extremism. It was clear that he was talking about his opponent, Ronald Reagan. Ford and Reagan won almost the same amount of support in the Republican primaries. Yet, many delegates at the nominating convention remained undecided. This was a dangerous situation for the Republican Party. Party leaders did not want a fight over undecided votes at the convention. They worried that a lack of unity could damage the party's chances in the general election. The situation was similar for the Democrats. Support for Jimmy Carter increased. But some Democrats who did not like him began to say, "Anybody but Carter." Carter's campaign message was that he did not have ties to special interest groups, that he would be different.
I see an America that has turned away from scandals and corruption. I see an American president who governs with vigor and with vision and affirmative leadership. A president who is not isolated from our people, but a president who feels your pain and who shares your dreams. I see an America on the move again, united, its wounds healed, an America entering its third century with confidence and competence and compassion, an America that lives up to the majesty of its Constitution and the simple decency of its people. This is my vision of America. I hope you share it, and I hope you will help me fight for it.
Many people liked what they heard. Carter won the Democratic primaries in Georgia, Alabama, and Indiana. The other candidates fell hopelessly behind. At the party convention, he was nominated on the first vote. In his acceptance speech, he repeated the line that he continually used with voters.
My name is Jimmy Carter, and I'm running for president.
Carter said there was a fear that America's best years were over. He said the nation's best was still to come.
1976 will not be a year of politics as usual. It can be a year of inspiration and hope, and it will be a year of concern, of quiet and sober reassessment of our nation's character and purpose. A year when voters have already confounded the experts. And I guarantee you that it will be the year when we give the government of this country back to the people of this country.
Walter Mondale, a senator from Minnesota, became the party's vice presidential candidate. A month before the Republican Party convention, Ronald Reagan made a costly political mistake. He said that if he won the nomination, he would want Senator Richard Schweiker of Pennsylvania as his running mate. Conservatives got angry. Schweiker was a liberal Republican. Some political observers say this is why Reagan lost the nomination to President Ford. Many of the delegates wanted Reagan to then be Ford's running mate, but Reagan was not interested in becoming vice president. Instead, the nominee was Senator Robert Dole of Kansas. Nonetheless, Reagan received a long and enthusiastic response from the convention delegates when Gerald Ford motioned for him to come down and join him at the podium.
If I could just take a moment, I had an assignment the other day. Someone asked me to write a letter for a time capsule that is going to be opened in Los Angeles 100 years from now. We live in a world in which the great powers have poised and aimed at each other horrible missiles of destruction, nuclear weapons that can in a matter of minutes arrive in each other's country and destroy virtually the civilized world we live in. And suddenly it dawned on me, those who would read this letter 100 years from now will know whether those missiles were fired. They will know whether we met our challenge, whether they have the freedoms that we have known up until now will depend on what we do here. Mr. President.
It was a preview of the strong and confident speaking style that would serve Reagan well 4 years later. Indeed, as the future president, Ronald Reagan would be known as the great communicator. The general election campaign started in September 1976. One newspaper said, the campaign left voters feeling sleepy because it was not very interesting. Ford and Carter agreed to debate each other on television. No one had done that since 1960, when Richard Nixon and John Kennedy had several televised debates. Many people thought Ford did a little better than Carter in the first debate. In the second debate, however, President Ford made a mistake. He wrongly suggested that the Soviet Union did not control Eastern Europe.
I don't believe that the Yugoslavians consider themselves dominated by the Soviet Union. I don't believe that the Romanians consider themselves dominated by the Soviet Union. I don't believe that the Poles consider themselves dominated by the Soviet Union. Each of those countries is independent, autonomous. It has its own territorial integrity. And the United States does not concede that those countries are under the domination of the Soviet Union.
Carter responded,
I would like to see Mr. Ford convince the Polish Americans and the Czech Americans and the Hungarian Americans in this country that those countries don't live under the domination and supervision of the Soviet Union behind the Iron Curtain.
The third debate did not have a clear winner. Opinion polls showed that many voters were still undecided. In November, Jimmy Carter won the election. He received 51% of the popular vote. President Ford won 48%. A lot had changed in the 2 years since Jimmy Carter began to receive national attention. Most Americans had never heard of him before. Now, many of those same people had just elected him the 39th president of the United States.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow for another VOA Learning English program on the Voice of America. And find more stories as well as activities and videos on our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.